The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In the UK, less than half of the 5,700 people who've been contacted to be removed to Rwanda are reporting for their appointments and they cannot be located. Kevin Saunders, Chief Immigration Officer in the UK between the years 2001 and 2016, was asked by the BBC why the Home Office is saying that these people are not missing.
I wouldn't like to say that the Home Office is telling porkies here, but let's say that they temporarily can't find them.
Okay. They have said, the Home Office, that there are different levels of reporting appointments and therefore some report in different ways. Is this essentially, this number comes from those who fail to turn up to scheduled appointments and who can't be reached on any phone numbers or other contact details that the department has?
It's people that they've lost contact with.
Okay, which rather does suggest that they are missing, or there's no real reason to suggest that they are suddenly then going to appear.
They're not going to appear, or certainly not in the UK. They'll probably turn up in Ireland, but they know that they are in the frame to be removed. They don't want to be removed, so they're going to disappear.
So what is the answer to this, do you think? Because I know, I understand that I think you are a supporter of this policy. Is that right, the Rwanda policy?
Yeah, oh dear, yes, I am. I do think it'll work.
Well, how will it work?
Well, we know it'll work because people are disappearing already. They don't want to go to Rwanda. So we're seeing people now disappearing because right. they've been told they're on the list, so to speak. Going to Ireland, first of all, disappearing into the unregulated economy. So they're worried, yes.
But the pledge was not divert the boats and get people to Ireland instead. The pledge was to stop the boats. And I'm wondering how you what you think the answer is, that do people who arrive here on boats, for this to work, do they have to be detained straight away so that this can't happen in other cases?
Well, I've long said that I would detain everybody that arrives. I know that sounds a bit harsh and very, very expensive, but I would like to have seen everybody detained. It's the only way to do it.
So that's the voice of Kevin Saunders, the Chief Immigration Officer in the UK between the years 2001 and 2016. He was talking to the BBC earlier today. Meanwhile, an emergency law to transfer asylum applicants back to the UK is set to be approved at Cabinet today. But, of course, will it be enforceable? And what does the EU make of this diplomatic mess with our nearest neighbours? I'm joined by a number of guests, Declan Power, Security and Defence Analyst, by Cathal Malone, Immigration Lawyer, and by Dominic McGrath, the UK correspondent for the Business Post. Good morning, one and all. We'll get the UK perspective, first of all, Dominic. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, this is a very prominent, I suppose, spat between Ireland and the UK. I'm not sure how much of a profile Ireland is having in the UK on this one, but it is all really about the local elections, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. I think, you know, the Rwanda policy, I think it's really important to make clear, is totemic. It's become a talisman, you know, for this Tory government. And in part, that's because they are facing not just local elections in a few days' time, but they're facing a general election, you know, probably October or November. And to be quite frank, you know, Rwanda is, you know, one of the few quote-unquote successes that Rishi Sunak can point to, in the sense that passing his legislation and getting flights off the ground is one of the few things he can say that he has actually done in office that will chime with voters, because, you know, he's very far down in the polls. Labour is tipped to win. You know, public services are falling apart. You know, he can't raise taxes in the, sorry, cut taxes in the way that his Tory supporters want. So in many ways, Rwanda is kind of, he's in a corner, and Rwanda is this key policy for him that he wants to show it can work. Now, many have said it is unworkable. There are still questions about, you know, when and who is actually going to fly asylum seekers to Rwanda, and if it becomes actually fully operational as he intends by around summertime, which, you know, is not far away. So, yes, I mean, I think the Taoiseach alluded to it, that, yes, it is election season here in the UK, and things are perhaps, you know, uniquely sensitive. And Rishi Sunak, you know, it's good for him if he's picking a fight with the EU or an EU member state. And he doesn't want to be seen to be backing down, I guess.
Do we know what the general public think of Rwanda? I mean, obviously, the old Brexiter faction of the Tory party love all of this, the idea of anyone coming to their south coast on a boat illegally, that they should be shipped off to wherever. I mean, Rwanda is so ridiculous on the face of it, but they wouldn't really care. I mean, if they set up a prison on the island of Orkney, they'd probably be happy too.
I think there's some elements of confusion actually about the Rwanda policy, because I think this is actually, it's more perhaps, how do I put it? It's kind of very straightforward, but actually some of the facts I think people don't even fully comprehend. So what's controversial about the Rwanda policy is that asylum seekers will be sent to Rwanda and processed in Rwanda. And even if they are successful and they have, you know, a legitimate, successful claim, they stay in Rwanda. And actually, even more, I suppose, in many ways, bizarrely, even if you're unsuccessful in your claim, there are still probably mechanisms where a would-be, you know, refugee or an asylum seeker will probably end up staying in Rwanda anyway. And of course, you know, Britain has already sent millions of pounds to Rwanda before any flights have got off the ground, as Labour is fond of pointing out. You know, more journalists have been to Rwanda on trips with, you know, UK politicians than any asylum seeker. And I think the public are somewhat divided. I think they do see this as something that is, you know, morally questionable, is quite bizarre. I think, of course, there are supporters of it. You know, some people are very concerned about, you know, illegal migration, especially in the south of England, perhaps in, or at least the Conservatives hope, in kind of so-called Red Wall, former Labour heartlands that Boris Johnson famously won at the last election. But at the same time, you know, Labour, who, you know, probably will form the next government, are not enthusiastic about it. They seem confident enough to say that they probably will end up scrapping it if they come to power, as a waste of money and a waste of resources and just a bad policy. So it's difficult. It is a sensitive issue. But I think if Labour feels confident enough to criticise the Rwanda scheme, I think that's a good sign that perhaps the support is not perhaps there in the same way that Rishi Sunak perhaps might desire.
How fast is the clock ticking for Rishi Sunak? I mean, if he does disastrously in the local elections, is that the end of him? Is he likely to try to cut and run, maybe go for a general election and fall at the hands of the people rather than at the hands of his backbenchers?
I think the idea of a leadership contest again in the Tories is always played up, and it comes around and again, and, you know, I'm in Westminster most days and it's a rumour that you hear a lot in the corridors of Westminster, but I think it's highly unlikely. I think, I argue, and, you know, people might tell me I'm wrong, but I think it's still most likely that we'll see an election in the UK in October or November. I think that Rishi Sunak wants to use the Conservative Party conference as a springboard into an election. I think it's always the idea that no matter how bad things can get, there is, of course, hope that there is better news on the horizon. Maybe it's just a natural human reaction, and hope that the economic picture gets better, that inflation continues to fall, that maybe interest rates are cut. So there's lots of things that they're grasping towards. I think his credibility will be even more damaged if we do see very, very difficult local election results. But of course, even a bad night may not be catastrophic. You know, it depends on what the numbers are.
All right. So you think he'll go the full distance, perhaps, simply because if you're going to be thrown out, you might as well enjoy number 10 for as long as possible.
I think that's partly it. And I mean, there has been some speculation that Rishi Sunak, of course, is an incredibly wealthy person, is not unused to the high-flying lifestyle that comes with being prime minister, and that he may be tempted to go earlier in the summer, you know, spring a surprise election on Labour, if that's all he has left. Because, of course, in the UK, it is up to the prime minister to decide, you know, when the timing is. So it is entirely in his hands. But I still can't really see any situation where, you know, after a difficult, perhaps, local election night, with flights still not off the ground to Rwanda, with few other policy successes, with the economy, you know, still not great, still people feeling bruised by the cost of living crisis here, I still cannot see any situation where Tory MPs would want to go early.
Yeah, and finally, I should ask you about those flights to Rwanda. They're expected maybe to take off in July, but is there any possibility legally that they'll just be stopped anyway, that as soon as one individual who's got some heft behind him or her who's scheduled to go on a flight, takes to the courts?
That remains to be seen. I think that has been the concern of some of the harder right-wing Tory backbenchers, led by, you know, former Home Secretary Suella Braverman, that there is still scope within the legislation for legal challenges, at least over individual cases. You know, the government would say it's watertight, that they can get flights off the ground. But I am, you know, very well informed that there are, you know, plenty of human rights lawyers who are trying to find ways within the legislation to bring a challenge.
All right, Dominic, thank you very much for joining us. Dominic McGrath, who's a UK correspondent for the Business Post. Cathal Malone, immigration lawyer, is listening to that conversation, as is Declan Power, security and defence analyst. Cathal, first of all, we are going to bring emergency legislation into play here. What do you think of what's going on in our cabinet and ultimately in our parliament?
It confuses me somewhat, Pat, to be honest with you, because I can't see why the government and in particular Minister McEntee are expending valuable both domestic and international political capital on something so futile. I mean, the reason that we need this emergency legislation is to correct a drafting error in a bill that was passed in order to account for Brexit. Now, the Brexit omnibus bill was a very long piece of legislation, and it amended huge swathes of Irish law to take account of the fact that our nearest neighbour was no longer going to be a fellow member of the European Union Club. And there was simply a mistake made in respect of the bit of that act which amended Irish law in order to allow us to continue returning people to the United Kingdom. Because as your listeners would be aware, you're allowed to return asylum seekers to an EU country from which they have come under the Dublin 3 system. But once the United Kingdom Brexited, once it left the European Union, that option was no longer available. So we introduced an alternative mechanism. We simply mucked that up on a technical level. Therefore, it was struck down last month by the High Court. And we now have the minister saying that she's going to fix that. The difficulty is, and I think a lot of the papers this morning have been reporting on this incorrectly, they're saying that the reason that legislation was struck down was the Rwanda bill. That hadn't come into force at the time. I mean, the Rwanda Act got royal assent from King Charles last week. So, in fact, we haven't yet had a court have the chance to look at that legislation in light of Rwanda. And I would be almost certain that in light of Rwanda, there would be no possibility that we would be able to return people to the United Kingdom, for the simple reason that, first of all, Irish law is very clear that if you're returning somebody to a country, if they've claimed asylum here, that they must have the real opportunity to claim and receive asylum if they qualify in the country to which you're returning them. In this case, that's the UK. And then the second place, the fact of the matter is that the reason that the Safety of Rwanda Act was needed, and that's quite Orwellian language, in fact, is because the UK Supreme Court had said that Rwanda was not safe. And so if the Irish courts see that we send someone to London and that means they're straight off to Kigali, that's as bad as us sending them to Kigali ourselves. Kigali is not a safe place to be. And therefore, because we're still bound by not just international or European law, but even the Irish Constitution, we can't send people back to those sort of conditions.
But the Taoiseach has said, look, we're not going to be the loophole for other people's migration challenges. So in sending people back, if the UK actually agreed to it, because there's got to be a mechanism for handing people over at any of the borders with the United Kingdom, whether the sea borders or Northern Ireland. You know, they say, look, you created this problem, so you sort it out. We're not going to be that loophole for your challenges. What's wrong with that logic from the Taoiseach? Because don't forget, the Brits are sending the people over to Rwanda for processing. It's not, I mean, it is a bit like to hell or to Connacht, I have to admit. But, you know, they're not saying, off you go, and you'll be processed there. Your claim for asylum, which you're perfectly entitled to do under international law, we won't be doing it here in London. We'll be doing it in Rwanda. I'm only being devil's advocate here because the whole thing is ludicrous. Sure. But, you know, what is wrong with the Irish government saying, you sort out your own mess?
Well, the first issue is that as you say, I mean, you can't just drive somebody up to the border in County Louth and push them over to County Down. I mean, both Mel Stroy, the Work and Pensions Secretary, and Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister, have been adamant that they will not be taking people back, which makes the entire thing slightly academic. And again, makes me wonder why it is that Minister McEntee is wasting political capital on this. But second of all, the fact of the matter is that Rwanda is not a safe place to be. I mean, Sally Hayden, the Irish Times journalist, was refused entry last month to Rwanda because they didn't like the way she reported on the country. I mean, any country that refuses to allow journalists to report is the sort of place that we should be looking at with some circumspection. And also, one of the reasons why the United Kingdom Supreme Court unanimously held that Rwanda was not a safe place to send asylum seekers is because it does not have a functioning asylum system. There is the theoretical possibility of appealing a negative asylum decision in Rwanda to the High Court. And the evidence that was accepted by the UK Supreme Court is that 100% of those appeals have failed. Now, Vladimir Putin doesn't get elected with 100% of the vote in Russia. You know, China doesn't convict 99% of offenders. The fact that Rwanda is satisfied that it has got a functioning asylum system where it rejects 100% of appeals should give us serious pause for thought.
All right. So whatever is happening in Cabinet today may have zero effect. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much for illuminating that for us. Declan Power is listening into this. Declan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Now, we want to hand people back who have come across our borders by sea, perhaps, but more likely over the border with Northern Ireland. How might it be done?
Well, I think Carl has been very clear on the reality of this situation as well as the legality of it. You can't hand people back to an authority that doesn't want to take them. And there is no mechanism in place that the British would seem to be willing to do that. And you can't literally, as has been said, chuck them up to the edge of the border and whoosh them across. I think perhaps the Irish government will probably try and pursue this. I already seem to see Micheál Martin making this case through the Common Travel Agreement, that this is an issue that the British government have to face up to their responsibilities. Both the British and Irish governments for some time have had an joint intelligence-led immigration policing operation focused on the border area called Operation Sonnet by the Irish authorities, Operation Gull by the British authorities. And that has been, you know, marginally successful. And the whole idea of that, what underpins that joint security operation, is the maintenance of the integrity of the Common Travel Agreement. So this is perhaps an area that could be focused on. And I agree with Cahill's approach that Minister McEntee seems to be focusing on the wrong legislative mechanism here. If the British were made to face up to the responsibilities that they have signed up to under the Common Travel Agreement, that would be one area to pursue. However, I can see them obfuscating on this because it's clear that we are caught in the crossfire of a larger issue between the UK government and the European Union, vis-a-vis the French stance on migrants and them being soft and letting migrants get into the UK. So there's another aspect to it that we will have to address this through a European Union mechanism. In the meantime, on the ground in Ireland, the reality is that up to 100 Gardaí have been redeployed up to the border to try and address this growing migrant issue. And the reality is it won't be dealt with. It won't be managed by a purely policing solution. It's impossible to do that because of the open border process. Yeah. And how much cooperation can we expect from the PSNI?
What happens? What do those Gardaí do and their counterparts in the PSNI across the border? What actually do they do? Do they stop buses? Do they, you know, go in and ask for documentation? Because, I mean, in the Republic, you're not allowed to ask people to identify themselves at all. Well, you don't have to carry an ID card.
That's true, Pat. Although that was the case, that what was happening was that there would be regular spot checks, as I said, ideally intelligence-led checks, on public transport, at railheads, at various locations where you would have clusters of people on the move. But the problem with that too was it was probably rightly so. It was various organisations. I think the Irish Refugee Council made representations that this was racial profiling because, to come back to your point, Irish citizens, British citizens were not subject to being checked by this. Who were the people likely to be stopped? Most likely people of colour who didn't have documents. That's going to raise its head again. And
so you happen to be Irish-born of maybe African parentage, you're on a bus and you're stopped and treated differently to white people on the bus.
Well, obviously, somebody of that nature is going to be able to, at some point, be able to prove their bona fides. But
yeah,
you're
but
quite
they're
right.
Hauled off the bus and the bus moves on to Dundalk or whatever. Do you know?
I agree. I mean, from a practical point of view, and obviously this isn't the solution, but if I was somebody in that situation or somebody belonging to me was in that situation, I would be saying, for the next period, make sure you carry documentation with you, your driver's license or your passport or whatever else, even though you're not required to do so. But from a practical point of view, if you're somebody that could fall into that category and come under the attention.
Yeah, I mean, this would be the precautionary principle exercised by an individual. But, it's the kind of the victim blaming thing.
I agree.
Don't wear a short skirt walking down the street after 11 o'clock kind of thing. Make sure you carry the documentation. Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that from a personal perspective. But not alone is it victim blaming, but it's not an operational solution either. This is not going to be solved by those kinds of checks, even if the government might decide not. It might be politically too sensitive to do something like that. So the issue is, how are we going to address the movement of people from one part of the UK to another and then coming through an open border down into our territory? And in chatting to one of your researchers earlier, she mentioned, well, from a security perspective, what does this mean or where are the issues? And I don't see the security problem with the people that are moving. For the most part, these are people who are trying to just make a better life for themselves, whether they're economic migrants or not. That's an irrelevancy. But I can see it causing a security situation domestically. It's going to add to the tension that would be fomented further by elements of the far right. It's going to add to the complexity of policing this issue and create further headaches at a political level and a security level for the government.
Declan, thank you very much for joining us. Declan Power, Security and...
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.